First Samuel chapter 9. No, never mind. Let's go to First Kings. I'm sorry. Chapter 3. No, it's two different things about the same.
First Kings what?
First Kings chapter 3.
I'm kind of nervous about this week. I don't know about anybody else.
And I can't imagine.
No, I feel great.
The deck can be nervous laughter in the room.
How about a titter-titter tweet?
Any giddy laughter?
Pretty hot.
Or kiss my ass.
Certainly escaped me. That's all
there is. Remember what we talked about, that we're being put to the test not for the purposes of being disapproved, but for the purposes of being approved.
Well, you said about the great transgression last time. Like I said something, you said, that's the yes. I've been thinking about that a lot. kind of has staggered. I've kind of been frozen in this state of the great transgression for 48 hours. So, kind of ill at ease. Probably going to be stopping this with us.
I wouldn't
be wise.
It comes down to the core of faith. And the core of faith, it's where he says to you, I shall never leave you nor forsake you. That's the bottom line. Mm-hmm. Anyway. All of these things are the worshiping of molten images and the grove activities, and all of those things we know are high place activities. In the Hebrew, the word is bama. And it's really worshiping on the high places. It's the recognition that from the time that you had a perception or a capacity to think about yourself, that you have been worshiping. That's all you've done, because you are created to worship. You never knew you were worshiping. All you're doing is sitting around thinking and learning different techniques of thought and behavior patterns. But the scriptures say that all of that is worship, because you are the temple of God. And in that temple, there's the burnt offering altar, which is symbolic of the stomach, which we'll get into later, moving up towards the incense altar, which is your thoughts, which is your prayer, into the Holy of Holies, which is covered by a veil, and that veil is the flesh. Now, during the course of the walk from Egypt to the promise, it really has one end, and that is the final end, that the flesh would be torn, so the veil, the Holy of Holies, would be open. Every thought that you have ever thunk has been an act of prayer to something. Every emotion that you've ever felt has been an act of worship. This isn't negotiable. You have, from the very beginning of your recognition of self, from self-awareness, you have always tithed 10% automatically to your chief God. The thing that must take place in you is you must begin to see that nothing and none of these things are optional, because you were created to do it. All men were. You were created to worship. You were created to pray. You were created to tithe. Now, the only thing that's happened to you up till this point is that you've been worshiping dumb gods. You've been praying to marred idols. And you've been tithing to evil kings. The high place activity is, and the high place attack is simply a vehicle by which you see with your senses what you have been doing automatically. There's nothing magical about it. Am I communicating? Every man on the face of the earth prays 24 hours a day. You worship 24 hours a day. You work, for most of the time, you're worshiping and praying to the wrong gods. Now, we read about Solomon or Elijah. And if you went to Sunday school, you've heard that they were these great, wonderful guys, that they were some kind of mythical folk heroes. But they weren't. They were just like you and I. And Solomon screwed up all over the place. We're going to see in a minute that he had 700 wives, 300 concubines, or 900 concubines.
No, I think it was 700.
Huh?
It was an even 1,000 last time I counted.
Okay.
He reads that part a lot. I like that part.
But here we're going to read about Solomon, this hero of faith, this one of the big guys. Okay? Chapter 3. So 1 Kings chapter 3. And Saul made affinity with Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Made affinity means he made an alliance. And took Pharaoh's daughter and brought her into the city of David until he had made an end of building his own house and the house of the Lord and the wall of Jerusalem round about. Now, anytime you see the word builded, it's a Hebrew word that can just as easily be translated understood or understand. And so when it talks about, it says Solomon brought in, he married is what it is. He married Pharaoh's daughter until he made an end of building his own house. Now, until he made an end of understanding his own house. And that's what we must see. And Noah builded an altar. Well, just easily, there's only been one altar. It's the altar that Adam, it's the altar, you know, every, it's the one altar that's in the temple. When it says, and Noah builded an altar, it means he understood the altar. When it says you build an altar, it means you understand the altar.
It's already in place.
It's already in place. Now in verse 2, only the people sacrificed in high places because there was no house built unto the name of the Lord until those days. Now, this is a process that's going on. You're still worshiping in the high places because you don't see that there is a house for the Lord. You don't yet see or understand that you are the temple of God. And so you're still, the people are still worshiping in the high places. In verse 3, and Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of David his father, only he sacrificed and burnt incense in high places. Same as you.
You mean except that he did that, or only he was the only one that did it?
No, except that he did it. He did it too. If we read about Elijah a little further, we'll find out that Elijah really got pissed off when one of the kings broke down the altars in the high place. And he really pissed him off. And here Elijah is the one that Jesus talked about as being, it's the one, Elijah and Moses are the ones that appeared in the Mount of Transfiguration. So my point to you is, it's a function of timing from God's perspective. It's an appointed time. That's what we've talked about so often, that from the two witnesses that are standing inside you, one is prophecy and one is wisdom. All that preaching is prophecy with wisdom. The essence of wisdom is the sense of timing. Enoch represents wisdom, Elijah represents prophecy. And those two witnesses are manifested in you, in your temple. So we've got to come to a point now where we say, all right, I understand. I understand I've been worshiping in the high places all my life. I've been worshiping false gods. I'm tired of it. I see that those false gods are marred. I see they have brought me no life. I see I've been a prisoner of all of these myriads of idols and green trees. Now I want them destroyed. And that's what the function that takes place just before each Passover. So here we have Solomon sacrificing and burning incense in the high places. And the king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was the great high place. 1,000 burnt offerings did Solomon offer upon that altar. In Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, ask what I shall give thee. Now, if you read the rest of that, you'll see that he asked for wisdom. So, at the point of a false high place, Gibeon, the Lord appeared to him in a dream. And the Lord said to him in the dream, ask what you will of me. And that was another test. And in the dream, Solomon asked not for long life, not for riches, not for anything that manifested or was represented by the high places that he'd been on and been worshiping at. He asks for wisdom. Well, the meaning of that is that even though at that point he was sacrificing in the high place in Gibeon, he saw it was done. And so at the moment that he could ask, have anything that he wanted in the universe, his request was for wisdom. At that time, in the spirit, the high places had been totally destroyed. Understand? Now, what would your response be if, whether in a vision or in a dream or in reality, God appeared unto you and said, ask what you will, and it shall be done for you? You know, this is the source of the legends about rubbing the magic lamp and Aladdin, and there's one in every culture. It's a test of your high places. What would you ask for? Now, you got to understand that the person that's asking you what you will ask for knows what you will answer before you answer. So you can't fake him out. And the test is, can you say with a certainty, my only request is for wisdom? If you can, then it's time to build the temple. You'll see the next thing that happens here in the next couple chapters is now then Solomon finishes the building of the temple. The temple is dedicated, the Ark of the Covenant is put into the temple, and all high place activity is destroyed. That's what's before you. That's what this weekend's about. Ask what you will, and it shall be done for you. That's the test. You understand? Now, there's all these circuitous routes to get to the same place. I mean, I'm old, relatively speaking, compared to the people in this room. Harry's not that much younger than I am, but I'm far older than he is in experience.
You're vastly old.
Thank you, Harry.
But my exhortation to you is I have lived what most of you would dream about living. You know, I've been all over the world innumerable times. I've been in the best there is in the world. I've had all the money I ever wanted. I've had all the women I ever wanted. There is nothing there. There's no there there. And so, a long time ago, now, my request was for wisdom. Not because I was some special kind of saint. It was because I had lived and experienced and found out there was no there, there, and all the other things that I thought I wanted. Now, time will tell whether or not God gave me wisdom or not. But that's all I wanted. At that point, then, all the high place activity lost its magic. And that's why I've said to you over and over and over, if there's something that you think you need to do, go do it. I'll help you go do it. If you can't experience it and see through it by empathy, then go do it. Until there's nothing left that you desire to do, save wisdom. Again, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream and said unto him, ask what you will. And Solomon said, give me wisdom. That in the spirit was the point at which all the high place activities of Solomon had been destroyed. Now he's ready to build the temple, to understand the temple. Because he's already built the temple. The temple's been there since before time. Before the foundation of the earth. We've been chosen in him from before the foundation of the earth. All he's done is patiently wait for you to be able to say, I want wisdom. And mean it, because you can't fake him out. Now, my goal, my purpose in life, is to do only one thing. You can't learn a damn thing from me. My only function is to root out, to pull down, to throw down, to destroy idols. I think I do it rather well. What?
Just made me laugh.
Now,
Mr. T.
Mr. T, am I down?
So that's what I want you to think about between now and your arrival, other than your lists, is what would you say if the Lord of the universe appeared to you and said, ask what you will and it shall be done for you? That's a biggie. It's a magic kind of question.
It is. I don't even know. Seems like it'd be an impulsive kind of thing. You wouldn't have to think about it, but I'm going for it. What would I ask?
Now,
I'll get back to you.
Again, now what? Yeah, I'll get back to you on that. Let's do lunch next week. I'll get back to you.
That's what I really wanted to say. I would know what to ask for. I mean, I might be like a total liar sitting here, but I don't think so. I was thinking, okay, what would I ask for? And I couldn't think of anything. I can name a bunch of shit. I want a million women, I want a ton of money, I want to own the world, I want to live forever, but...
When I was a little kid and my mother would read me those stories about somebody that gave him three wishes, I couldn't understand how come they were so stupid, you know.
Yeah, because why didn't... She asked for all as many wishes as 3,000.
Give me 5 million wishes.
Yeah. Yeah. For unlimited
that I could use forever.
Yeah.
I mean, you'll do it at the end, but I thought Thought long and hard about this.
Still
working. Still
working.
In a lot of cases, you say, man, I wish.
What are
you asking?
I'm
going to be ready.
Yeah, I mean, you end up.
Wish I had some nachos.
You know, you're wandering around wishing I could fly, and he turns you into a bird, you know, that can't think anymore. So you have to.
So what you want is like a
God appears and says, you can have anything you want. And the guy says, all right. Make my dick so long it'll touch. No. He goes, make my dick touch the floor. His legs fall off.
And then there's the three guys in the aisle, and then somebody, you know, a genie appears to them, and they all get one wish. And the first guy goes, gee, I wish I was back in Toledo eating my mom's hotcakes or something. You know, they're stranded on this island, so he's back there eating hotcakes. The second guy, gee, I wish I was, you know, skiing the slopes in Colorado. So he's back there, and the third guy goes, I wish those two other guys were back here with me.
I sure miss my buddy.
Boo.
It's that hippie diplomat.
Really?
Like when Stevie was in front of, what's his name?
I think the word is insipid.
Yeah.
I don't think that's.
Again. We have to come to a point where there's no such thing nor any interest in subjective truth. Where you no longer give a holy anything about what you think. As long as or you no longer care what I think, or you don't care what anybody thinks. It's like, otherwise we're locked into this pathway of subjective truth. And you walk around saying, well, for me, this is the way I think it should be. Or, that's why, again, this is the only system of thought, the fundamental system of thought that is taught here that I'm aware of, where the only common denominator amongst us is the certainty that it's finished. Because otherwise you'll be locked into this system of trying to get it right. It's finished, it's done, it's over. All that's necessary for us to do is to see that. Solomon builded the temple. Solomon understood the temple. At the moment he understood it, it was built. Moses understood the temple. At the moment he understood it, it rose of its own strength. Now, otherwise we'll get locked into these ridiculous little arguments about what we think about something. Nobody cares. I mean, there's 1,000,000,000,000 places where everybody can go and sit around and they can discuss what they think about stuff. This isn't one of them. This is a place to come when your only hope is that it's finished. This is the place to come when you know that you are the chief of sinners and can never improve. This is the place to come when you know that you're never going to get any better, that you're hopelessly lost, and you have no more strength for self-justification. Then you can begin to hear the word. The problem with most of you is that you have no concept, no internalized understanding that you are the chief of sinners, that you're irredeemable. So therefore you spend an eternity trying to get it right. I know I can't do it. I know I can't meet the standards. I know that I'm hopelessly lost. And I know unless it's finished, I'm done. Now, for some of you, that'll come as an instant. You'll know it in its flash of brilliancy, that you'll know you are the chief of sinners. You are hopeless. And when you see it in that flash of brilliance, you will see his resurrection right next to it, knowing that it's finished, knowing that he is finished. For some of you, it's a slow, dawning awareness. You know, Harry and I have been talking that fundamentally, the problem with Harry is he doesn't understand sin. He doesn't know what sin is, so therefore his response to stimulus is always judgment. But God in his mercy is slowly taking Harry the path of Abraham, which is a slow dawning awareness that he is the chief of sinners. You know, Ed's always trying to get it right. What do I think about this? Well, finally, there'll come the struggle of Abraham, and one night when you're tired of trying to climb the ladder, you will see that the angel of the Lord has beat you, and your walk will be different from that point. With me, it came in a flashing brilliance in one moment of time in 1972. I knew I was the chief of sinners. I didn't need any idiotic preacher to tell me I was a sinner. I knew it. I knew this flesh was hopeless, that this mind was without redemption. And unless he was resurrected in me totally, completely, now I was dead meat. From that moment on, I could care less what I thought about something. I could care less what you think about something. And I could care less what the world thinks about something. All I know to do is to cause you to see that you are the chief of sinners and stop justifying yourselves. That's the purpose of the hot seat. You will get wasted the moment you try arguing. The moment you justify yourself one iota, you'll get chopped up. You'll get chopped up to such an extent you will pray for a way, a helicopter, a jet plane to get you off that ranch. It's finished. If it isn't finished, we're hopeless. And if you don't know that, this isn't the place for you. Let's quit. Take it, big guy.